Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 28. I'm recording it on Friday, October 17th, 2008. The PE10 level today is 17. That's a little bit above fair value, but a perfectly reasonable valuation level. Stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition when purchased at today's prices. The title of this podcast is Common Sense is the Problem, with the word problem in quotes. First, I wanted to just apologize for the last podcast that I recorded, number 27. That one was on the efficient market theory. The efficient market theory is a big bunch of hooey. There was a lot of sound of children arguing in the background on that one. That's not right. That shouldn't be there. And I have two boys, Timothy and Robert, and they had a couple of friends over, and they were in the room next door to where I record these. And I went into the boys and I explained. I said, "Daddy is doing a very important podcast, and it's going to be broadcast globally, and there are millions of people who will be tuning in, people who are worried about what's happening with their stock portfolios, and they're hanging on Daddy's every word to know what to do next." I said, "You boys understand? You have to be quiet." And they said, "Oh yeah, we understand, Daddy." And then I came in and set everything up, and just before I pushed the button, I said, I better remind them one last time. And I said, "Boys, you know that you're not allowed to make noise up here for the next hour or so, and either you have to talk quietly amongst yourselves or you can go downstairs and make noise." "Oh, that's fine, Daddy." And of course I pushed the button, and within seconds they're arguing about their Lego clone, what is it, stormtroopers and clones, and they are trading a purple clone for an orange clone. And all of this is being recorded for posterity in the background of my Efficient Market Theory podcast. So I had another little talk with the boys afterwards, and they say that now they understand, but we'll see. But they're at a friend's house now, I believe. So hopefully this one will be a little more quiet in the background. We'll see. The other time I had one of those neighbors mowing their lawn when I was recording a podcast, so you never know. The other thing I need to apologize for is, listening back, I was talking about the movie Broadcast News, and I said that the woman actress was Helen Hunt, and that's not right. I believe that the woman actress was maybe Holly Hunter is who I think it was, but it was definitely not Helen Hunt. It's a big problem with this podcast medium is how to do corrections. When you get something wrong in an article and you find out, you can just go in there and change the words, and no one's the wiser. It's wonderful. But when you do a podcast, it's sort of out there forever, unless you know how to edit them. And I'm sure there are smart people who know how to edit them, but that's not me. If I try to do something like that, I push a wrong button and I blow up some third world country. So I'm just going to leave the errors in there. But if a terrible one comes up, like, oh, if I get the safe withdrawal rate wrong, I probably won't even mention it. But if I get the name of the actress in Broadcast News wrong, I'll try to fix it in a future podcast. All right. How did I get to be so smart? That's a question I ask myself every now and again. Here I am. I've got 28 podcasts to my record at this point. Most of them going about an hour long. some of the saner ones, at least I cut off at 32 minutes, but more recently they've been going 50, 60, one went 75 minutes. Who is this Rob Bennett individual, and how does he get off knowing, you know, claiming to know so much about stock investing? What my Bennett, let me tell you what my edge is. Let me tell you what my edge is. My edge is that I don't know a lot of stuff. That's really my edge, as strange as that may sound. People think that investing is a game of intellect. And this is why people put such confidence in the quote-unquote experts. They think, oh, these experts, they've read all the books, they've talked to all the other smart people, they've managed these big funds. They've got me intellectually beat 10 times over. I better listen to what they say. Well, it's not so. It's not so today. Maybe there will come a day when it's so, but it's not so today. All that the experts have that you don't have is they've read all the books that say that the efficient market theory is right, and the efficient market theory is not right. Listen to podcast number 27 if you haven't yet. They get it wrong because the model they're using is wrong. And Rob Bennett, I had the advantage of not knowing anything about what's in those books. I had sort of heard of the efficient market theory now and again, but I hadn't studied any textbooks on it. I hadn't taken any test where, you know, they said, how, you know, what's the correct model for stock investing, and you had to fill in efficient market theory or get a low grade. So I didn't know any of that sort of craziness. So, you know, that's sort of a smart alecky answer as to how I got to be so smart, but there's a lot of truth in it. There are clearly blanks in my knowledge. There are blind spots. Because the big benefit, I think, of studying something in a systematic way, taking a course in school, is that you get a bigger perspective. You cover all the areas, and so you know if you don't know something, you at least know where to look to find out what you don't know. So there are all kinds of things I don't know about investing. Please understand. If you gave me one of these tests that they have to take to graduate from these classes, I would fail it. What I know is a narrow area of the subject, but I know that narrow area very well, in my humble opinion. And that narrow area is the effect of valuations on long-term returns. And when you talk about valuations, what you're really talking about is emotions, because it's human emotions that cause overvaluation and undervaluation. So what I really know is the emotional side of the investing project. Now, it just happens to turn out that's 70% of the project. That's the most important part of it. And they don't teach that in the schools at all. They just ignore it. I'm sure they have little mentions of it, but it's clearly not considered a big deal. And most of the big name experts just they barely scratch the surface on the emotional side. And, you know, so when I saw that this niche was so uncovered, I've sort of made it my business to fill it up as much as I can. And if you don't believe emotions are important, I'm not your guy. Just don't pay any attention to anything I say. But if you believe that emotions/valuations are important, that still doesn't mean I get it all right. You still need to take everything listen to everything I say with the necessary amount of caution, but at least you might want to listen, because I at least do struggle with these questions, which the big name experts do not. But I didn't even know that much. I didn't know that emotions were a big deal back in, say, the mid-90s when I began studying this stuff, when I discovered the errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate study. So what made me so smart? Well, what really made me so smart is I was doing something most people don't do. There was a time when I believed, like everyone else, I listened to the experts. I believed in passive investing. I had most of my money in stocks. I was just your typical middle class investor in every way. This is back in maybe 1994, possibly 1995, around then. And I remember getting my statement. I remember talking it over with my wife And you know, we got the end of the year statement, and our, you know, our stocks had gone way up, and we had a relatively small amount back then. We hadn't saved as much as we had in later years, but we were thrilled. You know, I was jumping up and down. I thought it was great. It's money for nothing, you know? So, you know, in every way, I was the typical middle-class investor at one time. But what was different is that I was planning an early retirement. I was planning on handing in my resignation from a high-paying corporate job, shifting over to a career as a freelance writer, which is what I do now, where I would be making a much smaller income, you know, a tiny fraction of what I used to make, and a much less stable income, you know, a much riskier income stream. And so I had to prepare for that. And I was counting on my savings to see us through. I was counting on my savings being large enough that it would throw off an income stream that we could live on. And I was making adjustments to that plan on a daily basis. I worked this like a madman. Every day I worked on that plan, every weekend. And so one of the things I had to do, among lots of other things, there were hundreds of things I had to do, but one thing I had to do was figure out how much I could get from my investments. And so I was, you know, I looked at these safe withdrawal rate studies. That's what they're for. That's what they're supposed to tell you, how much you can afford to take out of a portfolio and have your retirement be secure. So I found exactly what I needed to find, but when I wanted the numbers to be right. I didn't want bad numbers, because maybe when it may be that people who are retiring at 65, maybe they feel they have no choice but to go with these studies. They have to retire, and so, you know, they trust the people who do the studies. But I didn't have to retire. It was optional. And I felt it would be a really stupid thing for me to hand in my resignation and get all the numbers wrong. And so I did spend a good bit of time on it, and I went to the actual studies. You know, I didn't just listen to what some experts said, and I went to the actual historical data, and I thought through the methodology, and I read books so that I'd understand what was going on. And that's when I read John Bogle's book, Common Sense on Mutual Funds. And John Bogle made it clear that valuations affect long-term returns, and these studies had no adjustment for valuation, so they were wrong. That's all I really needed to know. I didn't have the ability to calculate the safe withdrawal rate correctly. That would take statistical abilities that I did not possess. And so we've done that since. John Walter Russell is the one that gets credit for that. We've done that since. But I did not do that at that time. But the point here is, what drove me to figure out, and then once I learned that error in the safe withdrawal rate studies, that's what's led to everything else. You know, I discovered one big thing, that all of the retirement information we've heard for 20 or 30 years is wrong. It's wrong not in terms of a judgment call. It's wrong in terms of the numbers are wrong, because the numbers don't include valuations, and valuations are the single most important factor. I learned that one thing, and it could have well died with that. But then, when I reported what I had learned on discussion boards, I had, you know, I don't want to go into it, but we had all these reactions. We had lots of positive reactions, lots of negative reactions, and this thing called the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate. And I just paid attention to that, because that's what I do now. That's my writing career. I gather much of my material from discussions on internet discussion boards, because it's a new communications medium, and it tells us something that is not reported in the existing literature. It tells us how real live human beings apply the theories that are cooked up in you know, in the academic you know, the schools and so forth, how they apply those theories in the real world. So that's how I've learned everything else. Basically, I learned the safe withdrawal rate because I needed it for my own purposes, and then I learned how emotional investing is when I saw the reaction to what I had learned and when I reported it to others. So it was all, I just stumbled into it. It was all an accident, but that's the history of that. But why is it that I was able to see these errors and all these big name experts were not? You know? A lot of these people, they're paying $1 million a year to know this stuff, and they're still reporting the wrong numbers 6 years later, if you can believe it. part of it, I think, is that I did not have the training they had. So I did not have the emotional investment that they have in the old school studies, in the efficient market theory, in the passive investing model. When I discovered it was wrong, I just said, well, what's right? I'm going to do what's right. But I think a lot of them can't do that. They've spent years studying. They've spent years giving advice, and they're locked in. They say, I can't change now. I've been telling people for 20 years the safe withdrawal rate is always 4%, and now you want me to start reporting that it ranges from 2% to 9%? I can't do it. So I didn't have that problem. I was starting from a fresh slate. But the other thing is, I had a great emotional desire to know the realities because I had options. I could, if my study of safe withdrawal rates told me that I wasn't ready to retire, I could work a few more years. I had that option available to me. So there's no way I wanted to make the wrong decision. I wanted accurate information. And if you want accurate information, it's not all that hard to find today. We live in an age, the communications age. We have a wealth of information available to us if we look for it. So the information's out there. What's lacking is the motivation to find it. And that's lacking. It's lacking both among investors, middle-class investors, and also among experts. And it's lacking in particular among people who have had success with the old conventional discredited model. If you've had success with passive investing, you don't want to hear that it's wrong. You want to believe that you're some kind of genius that just knew to follow this model. You want to think you made all this money because you're smart. I mean, I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm just saying it's human nature. But if you never made a lot of money in stocks, and I hadn't, I had never had money to invest prior to the mid 1990s. So I had never saved before that. So it wasn't an issue. I didn't have an emotional investment in the passive investing model. So discovering that it was wrong was not a big deal to me. Now, what I'm getting at here is emotion. That we don't just learn things. We're not computers with legs. We learn what we want to learn. That's what it comes down to. We learn what we are open to learning. And in order to know what we are open to learning, you have to look at the emotional side of the question. It's emotions that determine what we are open to learning. That's why I say emotions are 70% of the investing project. John Walter Russell's site is a wealth of information for middle-class investors. Hundreds of fine studies that containing insights that are available nowhere else in the literature. But many investors have never even looked at it. Why? Because the insights there aren't necessarily the insights they want to see. They want to see insights that confirm strategies that they have an emotional investment in. So emotions trump numbers. You have to get the emotions right, and then the numbers will follow. You can't do it the other way around. You can't learn something intellectually and then emotionally develop an interest in it. You have to have the emotion, or you're not going to let the information in enough to get past your barriers of rationalization. So what I had, the edge that I possessed that has made me, and I say this in an earlier podcast, I know more about investing than John Bogle. And you can too. What gave me the edge over John Bogle is he's held back by all the things he knows intellectually over all these years, and all the experience he has holds him back. Rob Bennett doesn't have that experience. Rob Bennett doesn't have that educational background. So when I discovered passive investing doesn't fly, and there's lots of academic research showing that since the 1980s, to me it was just obvious what had to be done. Ditch passive investing, go on to the next model, find a model that works. And that's the model I call rational investing. So what left me open to those insights back in the mid-90s? Well, one thing that has always bothered me is that to the extent people talk about emotions in connection with investing. There's a little bit of it that goes on, not much, but there's a little bit. What is the phrase they always use when they're talking about how emotions affect investing? They say this all the time. They say, investing is about fear and greed. Well, is that a negative enough way of looking at the question? Could you possibly frame things in a more negative way? Fear and greed, those are the investing emotions? Fear and greed affect investing, to be sure. Never let it be said that I've said different. But it's not just fear and greed. I say it's fear and greed and hope and love. We humans aren't bad. Humans aren't all bad. We've got a bad side. So I talk sometimes on these podcasts, I'll talk about how you could have an IQ of 140 and you can still do dumb things. You could become an alcoholic, which is irrational. It's dumb. It's stupid. But people do it all the time. And the same way, you could have an investing IQ of 140 and believe in passive investing and leave all your money in stocks at times of high prices and get wiped out in a price crash. It happens all the time. It's been happening since the first day the stock market opened for business. You would think we would learn, wouldn't you? But that's like saying you would think we would learn not to become alcoholics. We all know intellectually this is a bad thing. We have a hard time emotionally tapping into what we know intellectually. But you can't say of humans that they have the propensity to become alcoholics and leave out the other side of the story. Yes, humans that have all the benefits in the world, that have an IQ of 140 and that go to great schools and all these things, sometimes blow it and become alcoholics. Sometimes human beings that have no advantages, you know, they're born to parents who are you know, drug addicts and abuse them, and they're sent to horrible schools, and they drop out of school, and yet somehow they turn their lives around, and they become incredibly productive, happy people. That also happens all the time, and that's irrational too in its way. It's a positive story, but it's how do they do it? If you were an odds maker, you'd say they're doomed at age 12, but they pull it off. And it happens. It happens not all that infrequently. So that's another case of how we are, quote, irrational. And that's because while emotions can steer us wrong, emotions can also steer us right. Sometimes these people that have all these negatives, all these things holding them back, they've got something inside them. They had one teacher who was an inspiration, a teacher who loved the subject and who opened a door to them, and they saw the gold on the other side, and they said, I'm going to get there. I'm going to get there, and nobody's going to stop me, and I'm never going to quit. I'm going to get there. They have love in their hearts. They have love for a dream. They have love for intelligence and goodness and kindness. They have love for their fellow humans. And they get there. They do it. So when I talk about emotions, don't think I'm talking about it the way the conventional investment advisors talk about emotions. I don't say that fear and greed is what it's all about. Fear and greed is part of the picture. There's no question. But it's not just fear and greed. It's fear and greed and hope and love. And I think the reason why I discovered things that others have not discovered is that I love my wife, and I'd be letting her down. If I had not calculated the safe withdrawal rate properly, I would have been letting my wife down. And I love my children, and I would have been letting them down. And I love my work. And if I had not made an effort to determine the real safe withdrawal rate, I would have been hindering my hopes of achieving the work I want to achieve. I love these things. I don't just like them. I think about them all the time. I think about them from the time I wake up to the time I go to bed at night on some level of consciousness. And that love is what drives me. It's what caused me to go to the library and pick up that John Bogle book back, you know, in 1994. And that's what causes me to go on the Motley Fool discussion board and ask for help calculating the numbers. And it's what caused me when there was a certain amount of flack directed at me and I was ready to drop out of the discussions, and then I saw other community members getting very excited about what we had learned, that love, which then had become also a love for my community members because they had shared so much with me and we had learned so much together, it became a love to advance, you know, to help the community, to grow the community. So what I'm saying is, now most investing books don't talk about this thing, this sort of thing. They don't say, oh, you need to love your fellow community members, or you need to love your work in order to be effective as an investor. Well, they're leaving out a big part of the story. Because loving your work, loving your wife, loving your kids, loving your discussion board community, these things are what help you learn what you need to learn to be an effective investor. So Rob Bennett says. If it sounds like it's off topic, well, call me off topic. I feel that I'm expanding the topic. I think the topic has been defined too narrowly. Investing is not just numbers. It's what you do with the numbers, and it's how you react to the numbers, and it's whether you're open to understanding what the numbers really say. And all of those things are emotional factors. And obviously, each investor does not have the same emotions that I have. You don't love the same things I do. But the same general principles apply. I can't say how many times I've reported the accurate safe withdrawal rate numbers. And people, passive investing enthusiasts, they don't want to acknowledge that the old school studies get the number wrong, but they can't argue with what the historical data says. It's a numerical calculation, so they don't have any legitimate argument. And what they'll do is they'll say, if the numbers are wrong, I'll tighten my belt. I'll get by somehow. Well, if they can tighten their belt, I hope they tighten their belt. But that's not love. A loving reaction to learning that you got something wrong and that's going to hurt you and it's going to hurt your financial future and it's going to hurt your family and it's going to hurt your chance of achieving your life goals is to do something about it. Find out what the right numbers are. Adjust your plan. Make the adjustments you need to make in your plan. So that was my edge. You see, what my edge over the quote-unquote experts is this driving passion I have. Not really to know all I can know about investing. I really don't care to know that much about investing. They can have that. They can have that crown. But I want to know what I need to know. I want to know those basics. I don't want to screw up. I don't want to have my retirement plan go bust. So those basics, those ABCs, that I want to know. And I don't intend to stop until I do. And that you can learn. You can learn. It's the information's available on the internet. It's there. And so that's really all I've ever done. I've just said, I don't care about Sharpe ratios or whatever it is that these people study. I don't mean to mock it. If they want to study it, God bless them. And if I ever want to know anything about Sharpe ratios, I'll Google it. I don't want to know about it because it's not in my field. Not in my field of concern. But how to make my retirement plan work so that I can achieve the writing goals that I intend to achieve, that I want to know. And I'm not going to let any expert tell me some story that doesn't add up. If the story doesn't add up, I'm going to check it out and I'm going to find out what does add up and I'm going to follow what makes sense. And I'm happy to share with you what I have learned. But I expect you to do the same. I expect you to challenge what I say if it doesn't make sense. That's the promise that we have between each other. Because when I share it, that's the spirit in which I'm sharing it. I'm sharing as a friend. So I'm happy to let you know what I've learned. But I expect you, as a rational investor to follow the same procedure I would follow, which is to be skeptical, you know, trust but verify. You know, President Reagan said one time, I think those are good words, trust but verify, what Rob Bennett says about investing. Now, this leads me to the title of today's podcast, Common Sense is the Problem. One of the questions that haunts me is, we've discovered, you know, as I say, this all started out with finding the safe withdrawal rate studies were wrong, which is a big thing. Getting the retirement numbers wrong is a big thing. Millions of people are going to suffer busted retirements, and that's one of the worst life setbacks imaginable. So that's a big, big thing. But in relative terms, it's a small thing. It's one investing question. And there are hundreds. And so in relative terms, it's not that big a thing. But what happened is, when we discovered those errors, well, then it naturally led to asking other questions. If the safe withdrawal rate is wrong, if they got that wrong, what else did they get wrong? And then we discovered that they got, you know, pretty much everything wrong. All of the advice you hear is, most of it is half right and half wrong. Buy and hold is not quite right the way they tell it. Stay the course is not quite right. Stocks for the long run is not quite right. You can't time the market. That's not quite right. Stocks provide stocks always provide a good long-term value proposition. That's not quite right. Just about everything you hear is wrong because the model is wrong. The efficient market theory is wrong, and therefore everything built on that model is wrong. So now we don't have just this retirement question, which is a big thing, but in relative terms, perhaps a small thing. We've got a really big thing. And that always amazes me. And of course, when I discover this really big thing, I wanted some confirmation. I didn't want to be out there saying, you know, Rob Bennett saying, all the big name experts have it wrong, and I've got it right. And of course, it's not all of them. There's a number out there that understand the model is wrong. Robert Shiller, Rob Arnott, Cliff S. Ness, John Walter Russell, Ed Easterling. Some, you know, there are people out there, Andrew Smithers, that know that the model is wrong. So I'm not the only one. But let's say it's 10% of what you hear. 10%. I don't like being in the 10%. I'd rather be in the 90%. So I want a confirmation. So I went to some of the people I respect, William Bernstein and Jonathan Clements and Scott Burns and John Bogle, Michael Kitsis, people like that. And what, you know, what I've discovered from communicating with them is that they have some knowledge that the model is wrong. All of those people. How much they have, I can't say precisely, but they know to some extent. They know enough that they should be asking questions for sure. And that concerns me because they're still giving out this bad advice. They're still giving out this advice that people should stick to their high stock allocations even when prices are at dangerous levels. So it concerns me. And I've tried to find out, why do they do that? And one of the hints that gets put forward, you know, I've never gotten complete satisfactory answers to this question, but one of the things that several people have hinted at is that they want to keep their investing advice very simple. And some of them have even suggested that they give different investing advice to clients than they do, say, when they're speaking to the press for an article that's going to be published and read by lots of people. And the idea seems to be that if you're with a client, maybe you can tell him, well, you should lower your stock allocation a bit, but you can go into a longer explanation and you can explain the caveats. And of course, there are caveats. But there's just this the feeling I get is that part of the reason for this is they want the advice to be very simple. Because if it's going to be heard by a lot of people, if there are any complexities, people will get it wrong. Now, I don't agree with this at all, and I probably will do a separate podcast on this question of how simple should investing advice be. And I'm in favor of simplicity, but I say it also has to be accurate. You know, as simple as you can make it while still being accurate, yes. But you can't get the retirement numbers wrong. That's too far. That's going too far. You know, I guess it's more simple to say that the safe withdrawal rate is always 4% because you never have to change it. You never have to worry whether they, you know, whether they're reading an old article or a new article. It's always one number. The reality is the number changes with changes in valuations. And I say you have to report it accurately. And if somebody reads an old article from 3 years ago and they get it wrong, well, they did something wrong. They should have known. They should have known to read a current article. Especially if you say in the article that it changes with changes in valuation. That's a clue to anybody reading it that the number is not always the same. So I favor simplicity, but I favor accuracy too. And I don't think you can sacrifice accuracy for simplicity. But there is the suggestion that simplicity is a big goal. And so I wonder, is there any chance that it would be better to give people, take aside the retirement question where I feel very strongly we have to give accurate numbers, but let's just talk about the passive investing question. I don't believe that, when I say that the experts know that passive investing doesn't work, and I do believe that, there's too much literature showing it and common sense frankly shows it. And there's too many statements by big-name experts that they understand that valuations affect long-term returns. So I know that the big-name experts know that there are serious problems with the passive investing model. But is it possible? But I don't think they necessarily know the extent of those problems. I don't think they've necessarily studied this in the level of depth they would need to study it to know just how bad passive investing really is. You see, you don't learn it in one day. You learn the problems, and then you have to explore deeper and deeper. And then what you end up learning is shocking. But I don't get my feeling is they know enough to know there are problems. They don't know how big the problems are. That's my sense. But say that could you make an argument that on the numbers side at least, passive investing is wrong, that you could do better with rational investing, or you could do better with valuation informed indexing. But say that there's an argument that the difference is not that great. I think it's pretty great, but I don't, just say that were not so. Could you then justify recommending passive investing on grounds that it's not such a terrible thing? The point of this podcast is to say no, you can't do that. And that's because the flaws in the passive investing model, it's not just that your returns are going to be lower if you follow the passive investing model, and it's not just that your risk is going to be higher if you follow the passive investing model. Both of those things are true. Rational investing beats passive investing on a risk-adjusted basis, always. Always. It doesn't always win just by the numbers. Just by the numbers, it wins about 90% of the time, but not always. But when something only wins 10% of the time, the risk of that something is high. So even if you happen to get lucky with passive investing, it really is just luck, and you were taking a higher risk approach. So it still wasn't the better choice starting out. Rational investing is superior to passive investing. So says Rob Bennett. But that's not the most important, our most important finding, in my view. The more important failing of passive investing is where it leaves you emotionally. And the implications of the emotional problems suffered by passive investors are far bigger than the fact that they earn smaller returns while taking on greater risk. It's really the emotional side of the passive investing story that really condemns it. And that's where I get the title of this podcast, Common Sense is the Problem. Passive investing, they say it's more simple. They say it's more simple. And on a You could make a plausible case that it is more simple, because with passive investing, you pick one allocation, you never change it. With valuation-informed indexing, you stick to your allocation most of the time, but every 8 years or so, you might make an adjustment in your allocation in order to keep your risk level roughly constant. When the risk level of stocks goes up, you lower your allocation a bit. When the risk of stocks goes down, you increase your allocation a bit. So in a surface way, that sounds a little more complicated. You've got to make changes every 8 years or so. That sounds a little more complicated than not making changes. I would argue the opposite. I say passive investing is more complicated. How so? It's more complicated because middle-class investors spend their entire lives learning how to buy things. We buy lots of things. I always have this litany. I say we buy cars and houses and comic books and bananas and lots of other things. And we learn how to go about buying. And one of the things we all learn is price is important. Go to a party and talk to other middle-class people, and everybody's going to be talking about what they pay for this and what they pay for that. We always talk about this. We talk about how much we pay for gas. We talk about how expensive it is to send our kids to school, all these sorts of things. So we always are looking at price. But when we get to stocks, we're told, no, 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 no. The experts tell us, don't look at price. Well, see, that's a conflict. That's a conflict. And that's a complication. That's a complication. It's a block. It's a block that stops us from ever really understanding how stock investing works. From the time they tell us price doesn't matter, I think a lot of us just sort of give up whenever understanding stocks. It just doesn't make any sense. And we sort of just throw our hands in the air and we say, stocks are too complicated for me. I can't figure it out. I'm just going to do what the experts tell me. And I think that way lies doom. I don't think you need to spend a lot of time studying stock investing. I know that a lot of people don't want to. I don't think you need to. But you do need to spend a little time. You need to spend just enough to understand that stocks are like everything else you buy, that price matters. That's what you need to get into your head. And if it weren't for passive investing, if it weren't for hundreds of experts telling people price doesn't matter, I could just say price matters and everybody would accept it and we'd be done. Lesson closed. What causes all the complication is that we have all these people saying something that doesn't make sense. And so people have to decide, should I go with what makes sense? Should I go with the experts? Should I go with what makes sense? Should I go with the experts? Now, this is where I get to when I say common sense is the problem. Most people end up deferring to the experts. Well, guess what happens? You defer to the experts, and for 5 years, everything works great. And you say, oh, glad I did that. But then things turn sour. And now, say we've had 8 years where what the experts say doesn't seem to be working so hot. The safe asset classes are doing fine. Stocks are not moving up at all for 8 years. Zero return. Now your common sense begins to reassert itself. Now you get nervous. You get anxious. You start to question yourself. Did I do the wrong thing? But then you've got all sorts of layers of complication now. Did I do the wrong thing? Well, if I did the wrong thing, then I've been wrong for 8 years plus 5 years. I've been wrong for 13 years. Is it possible I've been wrong for 13 years? I've given other people advice. Was I giving them bad advice? That makes me feel sort of bad. Are all these experts wrong? That makes me feel bad. You get caught up in all this craziness and all of it unnecessary. It's all complication caused by passive investing. If passive investing didn't exist, it would just be plain what to do with stocks. Buy them when the value proposition is good. Don't buy so much when the value proposition is poor. What could be more simple? But passive investing, by telling us to do the opposite of what our common sense tells us, complicates things. That's what I maintain. It appears simple. Stick to one stock allocation. Appears as simple as could be. But underneath, there are all these currents of confusion, and they all come about because why? because we humans cannot get rid of their common sense. You can't. There's nothing you can do. We are born with common sense, and we're doomed to possess it until the day we die. It's one of the problems. I mentioned alcoholics. Alcoholics, I think, can be compared to passive investors in that they do something totally irrational, totally self-destructive. There's a line that Jackson Brown has he has a song in there, Cocaine, in his Running on Empty album, and he says, he's sort of talking underneath his breath at the end of the song, and he says, I'm either going to need to start taking more of it or taking less of it. I don't know which. It's a joke, obviously, but the truth of the joke is, if you're taking cocaine or if you're an alcoholic, you get to a point where it's causing friction in your daily life. You can't hold a job. You can't hold a relationship. So you've got two ways to go. You can take less of it, you know, and shape up and become, you know, a functioning person again. Or you can take more of it and you don't care anymore whether you lose your job or you lose your relationship or you lose all your money. That's how passive investing is. Passive investing adds this element of complexity and friction into our mindset, where common sense becomes your enemy. Your common sense never shuts up. When you're going the passive investing route and you're sticking to stocks, even though they're dangerous as all get out, your common sense is like a parrot in the background saying, mistake, mistake, you're making a mistake, you're doing wrong, you're investing emotionally, you're going to get crushed, you're going to lose your money, wise up. Never shuts up. And as long as you're sticking with passive investing, you're shouting back at it, shut up, stupid bird. I'll wring your neck. Timing never works. Stocks for the long run. Don't you know? Shut up, stupid bird. But it never shuts up. So you've got all this internal friction, yipping and yapping. You're unsettled. And of course, then when prices crash, which they inevitably must, if they're at absurd levels, when prices crash, well, now the parrot, you know, he grows 10 times the size. Now he's not this little parrot on your shoulder. He's this giant monster parrot. And now, you know, he squawks and his beak opens up and he's got these big teeth. He scares you. And sooner or later, the parrot is going to win. Common sense will out in the end. Passive investing will fail. That's why I can tell you that whenever we get to the la-la land price levels that we were at from 1995 through the first half of 2008, a stock crash is inevitable. How can I know that without a crystal ball? I know it because those prices are irrational. And humans, while they do become irrational for a time, humans are, in a fundamental sense, rational. We always return to rationality. We can't give it up indefinitely. We become frightened at what our irrationality is going to do to us. So when prices go very high, stocks can no longer provide a good return. So returns become very poor. And the longer we go without getting good returns from stock, the more our tummies start to hurt. And as our tummies start to hurt, we start to think about selling. And then after we sell, prices come back down. You see, the stock market is self-regulating. The efficient market theory claims it's instantaneously self-regulating, that we're all so smart we can set the right price in 24 hours. It doesn't work that way. The stock market is self-regulating. That part they got right. But it's not instantaneously self-regulating. The market price can be wildly wrong for 10 years. Or even a bit more. The stock price was wildly wrong from 1995 through 2008. That's 13 years. But it's self-regulating all the same. Just because it went 13 years with prices staying at insane levels doesn't mean they're going to stay there indefinitely. We had poor returns for 8 years, and it became too much for the system to bear, and people started to sell. And of course, the high prices affected all sorts of other things. The high prices affected the housing crisis, and it affected, you know, the banking crisis and all this sort of thing indirectly. The high prices caused all kinds of trouble throughout the economy. But ultimately, humans are rational creatures. We can't become permanent goons, you know? Goons are investors who are just so dogmatic about passive investing they can't even stand to hear the historical data discussed. But a goon is a short-term thing. None of us can be goons permanently. The suffering that results is just too great. And we all return to our human roots. We are fundamentally humans. And our common sense is the downfall of passive investing every time. Now, the title of the podcast is a bit of a joke. I'm saying common sense is the problem. What I really believe, of course, is common sense is the solution. Common sense is what destroys passive investing, and passive investing is the enemy of the middle-class investor. But I write it the other way around. From the passive investing perspective, common sense is the problem. The reason why passive investing can never work long-term is that common sense always reasserts itself. So what I say is, if you're a rational investor and you want to go with what's going to work long-term, you want to go with the force that's going to win in the long-term. And your rationality, which is what passive investing is, can never win in the long-term. It can win in the short-term. From 1995 through 2000, irrationality was the big winner. But it can't win long-term. Rationality, common sense, always wins long-term. So if you're a long-term investor, you've got to be willing to look at the historical data. You've got to be willing to consider the possibility that stocks will perform in the future somewhat as they always have in the past. And you see, this shows the point I'm making in this podcast is the sort of point that would never be made in these conventional investing guides because they only look at the numbers. What I say is that I don't worry so much about the numbers. I do think they have value. I don't say the numbers don't have value. But my focus is on this battle between common sense / rationality and passive investing / emotionalism. That's the battle going on. And people don't write about it. You see, when you believe in the efficient market theory, all this emotional stuff is just ruled off the table from the first second. Because the efficient market theory doesn't have room for non-rational actors in the investing game. It's an assumption that we're all rational. That's where they start with that assumption. That assumption is false. That's why all of the investing advice we've heard, not all of it, but most of the investing advice we've heard for the past 20 or 30 years is wrong, because the premise is wrong. What we need to do is to spend more of our energies trying to understand how the investing side how the emotional side of the investing project works. That's where the action is in the future, I believe. And what happens to the passive investor is he doesn't eliminate emotion. By ignoring it, he doesn't make it go away. He makes it go subterranean. For the passive investor, emotion is denied on the surface. Emotion doesn't count. Valuations don't matter. Valuations are emotions. All that P10 tells you is how emotional is the market at any given time. That's all that P10 is telling you. When it's too emotional, you want to lower your allocation because emotion is risk. That's all the P10 is telling you. But the passive investor says, I don't need to look at P10. Emotion doesn't exist. I deny it. It's not there. But it is there. And when you deny it, it becomes gnarled and twisted and negative and ugly. And so I see so much human energy being devoted to coming up with rationalizations to defend the passive investing model. You point out the errors, and people go to, you know, incredible lengths to cook up these crazy word games so that they can deny to themselves the realities. And of course, all they're doing is hurting themselves. The rational investor doesn't know everything. There are all sorts of things about investing that I would like to know that I don't. But all I can say in my behalf is that I am open to learning, I hope. One big problem, of course, with being emotional is that when you're emotional, you don't recognize it yourself. So you can be blind to it. But I know that it's, I know that I want to be. I know that I want to be rational. And at least I do think that's a step in the right direction. So I say that passive / emotional investing cannot work long term because humans never really lose their common sense. And it's always going to undermine you. It's going to cause you to lose confidence. It's going to make buy and hold impossible at some point. I don't know when, but at some point. Because these doubts, this parrot is going to be speaking these doubts in your ear. And it's going to become unbearable. Whereas when you choose the other route, when you choose an investing approach in tune with common sense, and lowering your stock allocation when stocks get dangerous is totally in tune with common sense. When you follow that route, your confidence grows. The more you learn, the more confident you are. So year by year, you are a better investor instead of a more frightened investor. And when people like, you know, Warren Buffett and Burton Malkiel and John Bogle are coming out now and telling investors don't panic, it's good advice. But the time, you've got to lay the groundwork to oppose panic. The groundwork is laid when prices are high and you tell people to lower their allocations. Rational investors aren't panicking because rational investors lowered their allocations so that they took a hit when prices fell, but that hit was not so dramatic that it would cause a panic. You need to lay the groundwork to avoid panic. You can't come in after the fact and say don't panic, because even if it works short term, if prices continue downward, and we don't know whether that's going to happen, but if it does, there's going to be panic, whether these big names say not to or not. It's not what they say isn't going to matter. And the only way we can lay the groundwork to have a serious hope of avoiding panic is to get the enemy of panic is information. People need to be better informed about the basics of stock investing. And the most basic thing you need to know is valuations do affect long-term returns. You do need to change your stock allocation when prices get so high that stocks are dangerous. Timing is possible. Certain types of timing don't work. Other types do work. And what we should all be spending our energy on is learning what types work. That's what we should all be discussing. And we don't discuss it today because passive investing is an emotional model and it needs to block out these discussions. Information is the enemy because information causes fear. So long as you're not following a common sense strategy. Start with common sense and investing is more simple, less stressful. Start with common sense and your confidence grows over time rather than your anxiety growing over time. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.